Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A high school football player is reunited with the nurse who saved his life on the Today Show. A Portland-based crime ring nets $1 million. And a sleeping boy is bitten by a snake living in the family's walls.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, September 14th, 2010. A cardiac nurse who was sitting in the stands of a high school football game rushed to the aid of a player whose heart stopped beating during Friday night's game between Canby and Central Catholic High Schools. And now that nurse will be reunited with that young man on NBC's Today Show. Hayward Demison suffered a cardiac arrest and passed out just after making the game-winning touchdown during last Friday's game. His coach and teammates thought he was suffering from an asthma attack, but nurse Lisa Liver, who was watching from the stands, thought it looked like a cardiac problem and rushed over to help. I looked in his eyes, didn't see any kind of response at all. Everyone was yelling at him. It didn't look like he was breathing. And a couple of people down there tried to feel for a pulse, and we didn't feel one, she said. At that point, I thought, we can start chest compressions. And if this isn't what needs to be done, he's going to wake up and be pretty mad at me.
This is one of those things where I was actually just thinking about this the other day in the shower of all places. And I don't really know why.
Really?
I was thinking about Nurse Liver. What is her name?
Liver.
I was going to say livery, but isn't that a place down by the boardwalk?
That'd be a livery is where you keep your horse.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, I'm sure about that. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, no one is. Not even me, actually, if that makes you feel better. Then really, the point here is that I was thinking about CPR for reasons that are sort of lost in the sands of time. And
something
the thing
to
about
do with being in the shower and compression and
sort of a rapid expulsion of breath. The thing about CPR is they've modified it recently where they've gotten rid of one half of it. And I don't know which half it is. There's something you're not supposed to do anymore. You're either not supposed to do the breathing into the mouth or you're not supposed to do the chest compressions.
I don't think you do the breathing anymore. I could be wrong, though.
Now, that seems like the thing that's... Well, I don't know if it's... I guess it's not more important if they got rid of it. But you, am I making that up, or did they get rid of half of the CPR thing? They say not to even bother with it.
Well, the breathing thing doesn't help your heart, but the heart,
yeah, heart,
heart
pumping
thing doesn't help with the breathing, so I don't know. I don't know,
I
Rick.
I don't know what's right. This is like the Kobayashi Maru of the circulatory system. Damn you!
Liver gave CPR to Demison. 2 minutes later, he started breathing again and woke up. And apparently, this morning, he was on the Today Show and said that his left coronary artery will need to be fixed. I'm kind of nervous for that, he said, but I know God's with me, so he'll put his hand through the whole thing, so I will live through that. But I'm so anxious to get back to football.
Sounds like I'd just be keeping the nurse with me as opposed to God. The nurse really seemed to have more of a hands-on role in actually saving his life.
I'm always fascinated by this because, you know, here's a guy. He's got a defective left coronary artery. He has a cardiac arrest during a football game. He's 17 years old. So what is it he thinks? You know what I really want to do? I really want to get back to that thing that almost killed me.
Now, do we know that it's the football that almost killed him?
Well, that's when he had the problem. I mean, granted, he does have a defective left coronary artery.
That's what I'm saying. It really seems like lifting up an envelope probably stands an equal chance of killing you there.
But seriously, if
you
it was
just you, don't like football players, that's what this is all about.
Well, if it was anything, if it was mountain climbing or competitive bike racing,
competitive eating is actually where I was going to go. If he said, I'm going to go back to creating gigantic, iconic statues of Andy Warhol with bales of hay, you'd be like, well, he's going to live while he's alive. I know where this comes from, John Taylor. Don't think I don't look into your soul and see thee. I see thee.
I just think that once you have open heart surgery, perhaps you should not think the first thing on top of your list to get back to is something that's actually physically hard on you.
See, but
how about you start reading the great books?
Work your way up. I go the opposite way. If it's, you know, I would start with the most exertion filled thing I could possibly find. Because I just want to know how the story ends. Like, if it's going to kill me the first time I bend over to pick up a heavy package that the UPS has left in the porch, I want to know now. And I'd rather just get it over with. You know what I mean? Because otherwise you're doing that thing on The Price is Right where you're the, what is the mountain climbing game? The mountaineer where the guy is like scaling the mountain and then he falls over at the end? Otherwise, it's like you're progressively picking up a larger and larger series of figurative boxes throughout your life as you're exerting yourself more and more. And one of them will eventually kill you. I'd go do the most strenuous thing I could possibly find. And then if you make it through that, then you know you can do everything that is less strenuous.
See, I don't believe you, because if you lived your life by those rules, you'd be doing dangerous and exciting things all the time now. And you don't.
No, but I don't have a defective heart.
Exactly. So all the more reason you should just be going and pushing your limits and seeing what you can get away with.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's completely illogical. There's no great... See, now you're just being argumentative. There's no logical basis for that statement. You ignorant slut.
All right.
You kids, ignorant slut is, I'm not really passing a judgment on Dawn's promiscuity or lack of same. It's a cultural reference to a program that used to be on the air many years ago and which is rumored to still be on the air now, although I can't really speak to that with any sort of clarity. If you'll excuse me, I have to go pick up this piece of fuzz that's on the carpet because it's driving me crazy.
Okay. If your heart rate goes up dangerously high, then...
I wonder what the people in the adjoining offices sometimes think of this program. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A man prosecutors described as the leader of a team of thieves who operated around the country, including the Portland metro area, was sentenced Monday in federal court to more than 8 years in prison. Antoine Lamont Lawrence, 37, was convicted of leading a crime ring which broke into hundreds of commercial office buildings, stealing checks, credit cards, and personal information, and then using the stolen personal information to create false IDs. The thieves then cashed the stolen checks and shopped with the stolen credit cards, according to a memo from prosecutors. The thieves targeted office buildings here along Cruz Way in Lake Oswego, as well as several in downtown Portland, including the Medical Dental Building on Southwest 11th, the Mayor Building on Southwest Morrison, and a building at 610 Southwest Broadway. They also snuck into buildings in Tigard, Beaverton, and Tualatin. They would sneak into these buildings, go in buildings at several floors, specifically target offices of doctors, dentists, lawyers, accountants, and insurance companies, because those offices were more likely to have corporate credit cards, petty cash, and prescription drugs such as OxyContin. But the thing that it actually doesn't say in this story, and I was watching this story on the news last night, they would then go back. They would do it on the weekend. They would go back before the weekend was over and put everything back so that no one knew that all the information was missing.
Because they had all the credit card information, so you don't need the actual physical records if you've copied them or scanned them or taken the information or whatever.
They were also so good that a few times when people did notice that things were missing, they blamed the cleaning crews in the buildings and fired people from the cleaning crews.
That's awesome, in a horrible sort of way that I can't condone. But, I mean, if you've got a ready-made patsy, if you've got a scapegoat, then, by God, I mean, you're set. My whole thing about this... I'm sorry. I have to interrupt myself to say that there's a vuvuzela that sits on the table here. It's not that like I...
It's fully extended.
I was just going to say, it's not like I'm again the existence of it in general. I mean, I don't really care if it's there or not. But it isn't normally in a fully extended and
upright?
Phallic. I mean, it's just going to the sky like some sort of an Islamic spire just reaching toward the heavens.
Were you feeling intimidated by it?
Yes, I was. And also, it's blue. So that's no good. You weren't around when we had the giant blue dildo in the studio, though.
No, I was not.
No. We used to have this... It doesn't really matter.
Was it mounted on some kind of a board?
No, that was a rubber fist.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That Carl Klick gave me.
That I saw.
The less said about that, the better. No, we had a giant, a huge... And when I say a giant blue, and it was a representation of the male member, Complete with all the appropriate indentations and whatnot.
Like the drawing outside our building on the sidewalk.
It was really, it was almost that size. And it was the color of the vuvuzela. I mean, it was like Smurf blue. We had a listener who worked in a rubber factory, which is where they just made, you know, the tires or, you know, whatever. Just, you know, like the little, like a little rubber cases for electronics. And I said, well, like, what's the weirdest thing you've ever made? And he's like, well, I had a request one time to make a huge rubber dildo, but then the guy never picked it up. And it was just like some, I don't even know how it came to be, but anyway, it was just the fact that he just came to the studio one day and he created a replica of it. He's like, this is the thing that the guy wanted me to make, and he had made us, like, no lie, like 3 feet long and just a huge, massive, just a gigantic blue rubber phallus. And he left that with us, and we thought it was really great until they fired him later that day for mentioning his company's name on the air immediately after he said the phrase big blue penis like 100 times. So, but then I kept the penis. The end. And so it reminded me of that more than anything else.
Oh, there you go.
I don't even remember what we were talking about. The ring of thieves burgling Portland office buildings and stealing important information. First of all, you would think at this point we would know not to do it. Weren't we supposed to be living in a paperless society? I'm looking at the desk here at the Emerson News Network. Here's your paperless society. We have like a ream of paper sitting on the desk in front of us, and that's just today. That is just the stuff. I would wager that we are, in fact, using more paper in the average American office now than we were 15 years ago.
We are. That has been established, that that since the advent of computers, we have something like tripled the amount of actual papers that we use in offices.
It just seems to me that, just as a side note here, I'm occasionally accused of being just sort of reflexively cynical about attempts to quote, conserve things like trees or air or puppies or whatever. But it seems that the universe just sort of has the universe does, either by design or by just by the nature of its sort of internal construction, seems to just desire a sort of stasis. Mm-hmm. And so when we eliminate waste somewhere, the universe just says, well, I'll put it over here. It's like squeezing a balloon. My thing about the ring of criminals, though, is that that's one of those like weird leverage reservoir dogs kind of things. Mm-hmm. Where do rings of criminals actually meet?
Well, it says here they would plan their jobs in Portland, often at strip clubs, such as Club 205.
Well, that's good to know. Also, but I don't mean where would they plan. I mean, how do they all get together? It can't just be in jail. They always say, well, they meet each other in prison. But that seems like it can't be the only place.
I think sometimes if you're good at something specific, you get a rep. And well,
then the guy says,
I'm looking for a guy. And somebody says, yeah, I know a guy.
See, I thought that too. But then I was thinking, I had this whole internal debate with myself going while you were reading this story, about whether that's actually true or whether we think that's true because it's the way that we've seen it depicted in gangster films since time immemorial.
Suggesting that perhaps they have some kind of like a magazine or an underground Craigslist that they post to?
You wouldn't think so, except I read the most fascinating book a while back called, I forget the author, but the book was called Spam Kings. And it was this exhaustive analysis of the world of commercial spammers. You know, the guys who fill your inbox with things so you can get a penis that resembles in every way but color the large blue rubber Smurf penis. And presumably it's not made of rubber. But the guys who fill your inbox with spam, he spent a lot of time with some of the world's most notorious and prolific spammers. And spammers do, in fact, he said it was the most amazing thing, that they had like social gatherings they went to and they would rent out like the conference room at a Ramada. And these were all guys who were in violation of numerous laws, sometimes international laws. They were engaged in conspiracies to commit multiple felonies. And they would just sort of get together and they would, they would rent the banquet room at a Holiday Inn, and that they had a bunch of online message boards where they would all congregate and swap ideas about how to circumvent spam filters and how to get around international electronic measures that had been put in place to prevent spamming. And you wouldn't think that stuff exists because it just seems too fanciful. I mean, it just seems too straight out of a film. So I wonder if other criminals have things like that. I mean, it's not like it's out of the question.
Probably.
They have access to the internet, so why not?
They may have conventions.
I would like to think that, well, there's that pimp convention that they have in Los Angeles every year. All right, well, there you go. We should go to the pimp convention next year, Don.
Okay.
We should do the show from there.
Okay.
You're listening.
Will you wear a big hat?
Yes, I will. You've already got the cane going on.
I do.
What you should do is just have the top made in just a huge, just put a big glands on it.
What is it with you and the penises today?
It's not just today, Don. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM, a fine program for a fine network. Don't forget, you can get it on your mobile device as well. I almost said handheld device. but your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm, mobile.pdx.fm. PDX.fm. I'm glad you didn't really laugh at that because it wasn't really funny.
No.
You can download the archives as well at PDX.fm or legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
Police are investigating an overnight shooting that happened at 29th Avenue and Clinton Street. Rick Emerson in Southeast Portland. Several neighbors in an apartment complex called 911 to report the shooting.
Wait, am I a suspect or?
No, but it's in the general part of town where you live, isn't it?
Well, I suppose. In that it's in Southeast, I guess.
Several neighbors in an apartment complex called 911 to report the shooting at 1:45 a.m. When officers arrived, they found 50-year-old Cleveland Oliver suffering from a gunshot wound that was not life-threatening. Paramedics took Oliver to a nearby hospital after he gave a description of the shooter to police. Officers then set up a perimeter and searched the area using canines. They found a person matching the description of the shooter and arrested him in connection with the incident. Detectives are still investigating, and they're not releasing the shooter's name.
I mean, in terms of Southeast Portland, that's actually a fairly, it's a fairly nice sort of, it just seems like a regular residential neighborhood. I wouldn't imagine there'd be a lot of shootings or violence there. Maybe there isn't. Maybe this is just the exception that proves the rule.
Well, they said it wasn't gang-related, so it sounds like it was more a personal beef.
Just sort of a grudging, yes, that happened there. When I was bicycling many, 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 many years ago.
I remember that when you used a bicycle.
I only vaguely remember it, so you're ahead of me. I would go straight up Clinton, and you go through that area. And it's a very picturesque part of town. I was actually having this whole thing the other day where I realized I'm gonna write this down. And, you know, we write stuff down, and then we don't ever get to it. Like, you never did ask me. You write stuff down all the time.
Write it on the run sheet, and then because supposedly you look at the run sheet.
You know, you wrote something down yesterday that you were going to get to in the second show, and you never did.
That's true.
I remember what it is, too.
I think I wrote it on the run sheet.
Yes. Yeah, but how ironic is that? You make the run sheet, and yet it didn't work for you. It's just that sort of a physician heal thyself thing. Don Taylor, if that is your real name. All right, let me write this down here.
Let's see.
It was typing boots.
Oh, yeah, typing boots.
All right,
there you go. I don't know where I wrote that down.
And there you go. Fantastic. In any event, you are listening to Legion of News here.
We paused to do paperwork.
At pdx.fm. Well, if not now, when? If not us, who? This fine program is brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. They are a small private school in downtown Portland offering Spanish language classes for adults, and they do that in the following way. People say, well, what does it mean that they're doing it for adults? It just means that adults and kids don't necessarily learn the same way. Adults and kids, your brains just operate differently. When you're a kid, you can multitask in a much... That really is what it's all about, too. When you're a kid, you can just multitask a lot more easily than you can when you're an adult. When you're an adult, your parallel processing skills start to degrade over time, which just means it's harder to learn languages simultaneously. You know, a kid, you can learn 3, 4, 5 languages like as soon as you're born. You can just start assimilating that language.
Is that true?
It is true.
You can learn like 5 languages as soon as you're born.
I knew a kid who began learning 3 languages. Like the minute he was born, it was a house where there was, the mom was from Haiti, the dad was from Spain, and the kid, you know, he had an older sibling that spoke English. And so he was learning Spanish and French, which is what they speak in large sections of Haiti, and English simultaneously. And I mean, with the age, whenever kids start to recognize words or whatever, it was like, they probably could have taught him, like Sanskrit or something. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Wow.
And it just makes me feel, and I don't think he was some freakishly smart kid. I think it's just that... I think your brain just becomes tiny and stone-like as you
age.
That's
a survival thing. When you're a child, if you need food, it pays to learn what the words for getting food are very quickly, no matter what language they're in.
Or if a guy is just, you know, I mean, yeah. So if there's some angry group of warlords across the way that's going to come and perforate your head with a stone arrow, you want to be apprised of that in whatever language might be most conducive to spreading the alarm.
Mm.
I mean, theoretically. They're probably not going to teach you that at Castalia. I mean, unless I've really, really misjudged the way that Spain runs these days. In any event, you can find out more about it at portlandspanish.com. Classes are limited to 8 students. It's a comfortable, relaxed environment. Teachers are professional and friendly. And Clara Grebel, who is actually a longtime listener of, well, she listens to this show and of the Rick Emerson Show. She is a native Spanish speaker, raised and educated in Argentina, and now runs Castalia Language Center in downtown Portland. Find out more at portlandspanish.com. Here's Don Taylor.
I want to share 2 comments from the message board back to back. Someone said, "Remember when Rick was biking for the kids? I think they got $1.50." And
I don't know what you're talking about.
At the same time, wrote, "Wasn't there a group of retarded kids that was supposed to benefit from Rick biking? He just left them twisting in the wind."
I think you're confusing me with somebody else. I have no recollection of that.
So there you go.
Did you call it a message board?
Is that what I call that? I don't know.
On a BBS I was just perusing.
Here on the computer machine.
I was just using my Pine account to... All right.
Here on the monitor on my computer machine.
Don Taylor.
Gas prices are a little cheaper this week. Industry analyst...
Compared to what? Do you suppose? Is that a thing where they just spin a wheel of gas prices and they compare it to like last month or last year? I'm not expecting you to know, but that's a thing that they just say and they never give it any context.
That's okay. I just realized that this is an old story that I already read because I said, hey, didn't we already have a story from Trilby Lundberg?
Yeah, did
and
we?
And I realized, yeah, we did. Yeah, she was the one who said, yep, gas... She's the one, I believe, who said that... That gas prices are going down because people can't afford to go anywhere.
And she had that voice where she sounded like Tinkerbell. She had like a little pixie voice.
Yeah, I had the wrong piece of paper in front of me. So.
Here's Don Taylor again.
The NFL is looking into whether members of the New York Jets and several coaches behaved inappropriately toward a female reporter over the weekend.
The answer is almost certainly yes.
When she was covering the team's training camp and interviewing quarterback Mark Sanchez in the locker room. TV Azteca reporter Inez Sainz says comments by the players... did make her feel a little uncomfortable, but she says she thinks she handled it well.
I'm a professional. I have interviewed with the best players, so I know that in some moments you must be calm, relaxed. So what I try to do is not to pay attention.
I love her on Modern Family.
TV Azteca?
TV Azteca.
I'm unclear, but is that where we're getting... I mean, is that where they're beaming us entertainment from 1,400 years ago?
Do you know what kinds of remarks they made about her? Are you familiar with the story at all?
I was going to get to that here in just a second. I was just all... I'm sorry. TV Azteca is just a funny sort of a... I don't know, I've got nothing. And then you immediately went with the Modern Family thing, and so I was all thrown off. And plus, I don't know to whom she's speaking here, but listen to when she speaks. Tell me if... Because I wasn't making any noise here. She's obviously being interviewed by somebody. Tell me if it sounds to you... as if the presumably male anchor to whom she's speaking is making a series of grunting noises while she talks.
I'm a professional. I have interviewed with the best players. So I know that in some moments you must be calm, relaxed. So what I try to do is not to pay attention.
What the hell?
That's what I'm saying. That's not me. That is whoever she is speaking to. That is making a sort of sound about every 4 seconds while she talks.
Well, she is a former Miss Universe contestant and a sports reporter
for
TV Azteca. I'll show you in a moment. She was doing her story on Mark Sanchez. She was subjected, she says, to catcalls and had footballs thrown at her by a Jets coach during practice. And players later called out to her in the team's locker room.
Calling out. I don't even know what that means. I mean, that could be any number of things. In other words, it might have been, they might have been saying something that was actually very, like, crude or menacing. Or they might have just said, like, hey, sexy thing. Who can disagree?
She apparently was also wearing a very, very short skirt.
That's hard to believe.
You know, she didn't like... nose tackle Chris Jenkins of the Jets shouted, don't let her act like she doesn't know English. She speaks English.
He's a savvy one. You can't get anything by him.
Here's a very tasteful photograph of her someone took from behind.
Hello.
Yeah, she is a well-crafted young woman.
She was assembled by someone close to the architect, I think.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So she says she was embarrassed by the remarks team members made in the locker room, but she didn't realize it would become such a big deal.
Oh, that's just a lie. That's clearly
I feel a little uncomfortable because evidently it's not easy to be in the locker room and hear and notice that everybody is speaking about you and probably making some jokes.
All right. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm still back on the TV Azteca thing. That must be, I mean, is TV Azteca, is that a network that broadcasts within the United States, do you think? Or is that a...
I don't think so.
Because I would imagine our sports programming is beamed sort of all over the world, just like we watch, soccer or English football here.
Again, she was a former Miss Universe, and if you do Google her name...
Which I'm doing right now, by the way.
I-N-E-S is her first name, Sainz. If you go to Google Images, you will come up with hundreds and hundreds of photos of her in very tight jeans and bathing suits.
Here's the
and
thing.
Such.
I don't even have to finish the word. I got to the INE and that new Google autocomplete thing, which I was sort of poo-pooing the other day. I was scorning it as not being a big advancement. Seamus sent me this long email, sort of set me straight on the whole thing. And it's now working for me, by the way, because I just got to the INE and it actually put up, in a sense, pictures. Yeah. I didn't even have to put in her name. It just went right to the picture gallery. Wow. Hell, okay.
Yeah.
I'm officially, I am on her team, Dawn.
I believe, though, that if catcalls were made, you can kind of understand why. I mean, that doesn't mean that it's okay.
She was asking for it, Dawn?
No, I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm saying it's understandable.
I'm saying it's okay. Rick Emerson is saying it's absolutely fine. I have no issue with that at all.
Saying that, you know, it's never all right to objectify women, but often it's understandable why.
I'm sorry, what were you speaking?
I'll just read the news over here while you you drool on yourself.
You just get with the looking pretty, Dawn.
And look at the Google.
All right. You know, here's the thing is, and you know, anybody who's sort of listened to me for any length of time knows that she's not even my type. I mean, that's the thing. She's like, she's really not my type at all. But you, as you just said, you really do have to admire, in a certain way, just someone who I think, by at least our current cultural standards, really is proportioned more or less perfectly. I wonder
yes.
if it freaks you out to leave the house if you look like her, because you realize that just, you know, you're like one trip and fall down a manhole away from just ruining your entire life and career. You know what I mean? Like, if I was a model, I'm really glad that I'm not a pretty person, because if I were a pretty person, I'd be terrified of just damaging myself in some way. You know what I mean? Like, I knew this chick that was a hand model one time. And she had this whole thing where she couldn't, this is, you know, some time ago, but like, this is sort of the early cell phones and when people had landlines. And she had this thing where, like, she couldn't use her hands to dial the phone. She was always afraid that she'd, like, break a nail or F up one of her cuticles. So she had to have, like, a pencil that she dialed the phone with. And I remember thinking, like, it's not like it's a hard yeah. job, but that would suck because you're just constantly thinking, like, if I damage my fingernails, my life is over.
Exactly.
But with this chick, it's like if you damage your anything, your life is over.
Well, and I made the joke about her being the chick from Modern Family. And actually, there's a piece in the news today that woman who was on Modern Family, Sofia Vergara, who is hilarious. And she's also extraordinarily well put together and beautiful. And she's from Colombia. And she actually, apparently the story is she was discovered just walking around on the beach in Colombia in a thong. And somebody was like, "You there, you, would you like to be famous?" And she's like, "Sure."
Okay.
And she started modeling and stuff. But she just did an interview with Self Magazine and says, and this is her quote, "When I was 13, I got these ridiculous boobs. I wanted surgery. I told my mom, as soon as I'm older, please take these boobs away. She said, Sophia, shut up. When you're 18, it will be different." She's 34 double D.
What is her name?
Sofia Vergara.
I'm such an idiot. I'm such a guy. Hold on.
S-O with an F. Sofia with an F.
Oh, you know, again, I got to Sophia, and it just...
Yoing. It just goes boing. Well, you know.
Good Lord.
But yeah, as she said, it's hard for her to dress because she says, no matter what I wear, I look like a stripper. But she does also say, honestly, though, they've helped me a lot in my career.
You think?
She's also, she's great on Modern Family, and I saw her on Ellen. She's being interviewed by Ellen DeGeneres.
So to speak.
And just as her own self, she is hilarious and really smart and
see,
terrific.
But doesn't that just piss you off, though, when there's somebody who just looks like a supermodel, and then they open their mouth and they're hilarious and smart. And you're
yeah.
just like, you know what? Die.
Yeah.
Die. That's like when, you know, this is a strange comparison, but I have a
Some people just win the lottery.
I have a friend of mine, he and I were songwriting partners. We used to be in a band together, and we would just write these sort of, we were going through this like Britpop phase, and we would write all these sort of Britpop style songs and whatever. And we were huge Oasis fans. And we used to be just so bitter about Liam Gallagher winning the pools, as they say, because he's, you know, singing for Oasis, and he's a good-looking guy, and he's famous, and, you know, and he's kind of a great sort of raspy kind of, you know, like lad's voice and whatever. And we would console ourselves with the idea that, like, well, yeah, okay, but, you know, but Noel has to write all the songs, because Liam's a great singer, but, you know, there's no way he could. And then it was like, literally like 6 months later, it's like the new Oasis record came out, and there was this song on there written by Liam that was like the best thing we'd ever heard, and we just like gave up. By the way, that was not too long after we were talking about Johnny Depp, speaking of a guy who's just perfect. Johnny Depp, who's like the greatest actor of his generation and like mind-breakingly attractive, and then played guitar on the Oasis record.
Yeah.
You know, just like special guitarist Johnny Depp, who has the best life anybody could ever have. Incidentally, who was the first chick we were talking? I've already forgotten her. Ines, whatever.
Yeah.
The sportscatcher chick. See, here's where it all falls down with skinny chicks, though. I don't want to get off of the whole thing because we've now completely just gotten away from the news aspect of this program, and now it's just become pure me talking about a girl in a bikini.
Yes.
Here's where it always falls down with skinny chicks, is there's a picture of her in a bikini, and now I have no interest in her because she's just all points and bones and jabby edges. Skinny chicks, once you get their clothes off, it's like 9 times out of 10, it's a whole different story. Suddenly you're just not attracted to them. She looks good as long as she's covered up, I say. Sounding like a fundamentalist of some kind. No, you get her in a bikini and suddenly there's nothing. Yeah, no, I might as well hump Macaulay Culkin. All right, here's Don Taylor.
On that note, let's do our science news.
Oh, fantastic. I'm just as evolution made me, Don.
The Environmental Protection Agency will hold its final public hearings on hydraulic fracturing to access natural gas on Monday and Wednesday. The controversial process of hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, requires drillers to pump large amounts of water mixed with sand and chemicals into shale formations under high pressure.
Fracking, really?
Yes, to depths of 8,000 feet or greater, or even wells less than 1,000 feet. This process fractures the shale around the well, which allows the natural gas to flow freely. Over the past few years, technological advances and increased profit margins have spurred increased use of hydraulic fracturing, according to the EPA. The U.S. Department of Energy estimates shale gas will make up more than 20% of the nation's total natural gas supply by 2020.
All right, I'm confused about this. Is this good or bad?
Well, there are concerns that blowing up the infrastructure underneath our Earth to just, like, fracture it and let gas flow out might not necessarily be good on a high scale.
Well, not good for us.
It can affect, like, say, the water table. You know, and the environment in general. The thing is that it's been around for decades, but it's never been done on such a massive scale so close to population centers as it is being done now. It used to be done in fairly, you know, distant locales where it couldn't possibly, like, damage, you know, towns.
It's a gas. So it's not oil.
It's natural gas. They want to get at natural gas
by blowing up sections of the underground.
By basically using hydraulic pressure to break through the shale.
I see. Which is, I think, I was reading a thing about this. I think that's how they get helium too. I think it's like they found some weird helium reserve, like deep in a granite mine somewhere. So they're blowing big sections of granite up to get helium out of there.
Shale gas extraction has since spread to the Northeast and is occurring outside large population centers such as Philadelphia and New York City. Areas near Chicago, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, and Cleveland, Ohio could possibly be next.
That's no place we're going to miss. I mean, really. Seriously, if Cleveland were gone tomorrow, would it affect your life at all? No.
Well, no.
Of those cities you just mentioned, would any of them, would they impact your life in any negative fashion if they were just to vanish?
I've always wanted to go to Chicago. I've heard good things about Chicago.
Well, okay, fair enough.
But no. Yeah.
I like that's your final summation.
Playing shoot 'em up games can make you a better driver and stop you from getting lost, scientists claim. They say fast-paced action games produce a heightened sensitivity, which can also improve multitasking, following a friend in a crowd, or even reading the small print. Their study, published in the journal Current Biology, looked set to delight avid gamers who are often told the games do little except for provoke violence. Researchers at New York's University of Rochester took a group of 18 to 25-year-old non-game players and split them into two groups. Half played 50 hours of shooting games such as Call of Duty 2 and Unreal Tournament, and the other half played 50 hours of slow-moving strategy game Sims 2. They were then given various tests, such as deciding whether a group of dots on a screen was moving right or left. The research team found the first group was 25% better at decision-making. I would just like to say on a personal level, I've played a fair amount of shooter games, and I still get lost all of the time.
But maybe you'd be even worse than you are now if you didn't.
I would just be curled up in a ball.
You wouldn't even be able to leave the house.
A stairwell somewhere, because I don't know where I am.
I mean, you'd just step out onto the front porch and go, I got nothing from here. I am lost. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. But here's the reason I'm glad that a story like that came out. You young fry, you won't remember these days. But back when Uncle Rick was a lad, we always had to do this stupid thing where we would try to justify video games to our parents as, you know, being useful. But the only thing we could ever come up with was, It improves your eye-hand coordination, which is like, unless you're going to be a microsurgeon, which you ain't, there's like no need for that. Who cares if your eye-hand coordination? What is it? Like, I'm going to go play the U.S. Open? There's no need. This, though, actually makes a lot of sense, especially because first-person shooters, or shoot-em-ups, as the 100-year-old man who wrote the story describes them, because they're also, they're often, if not always, maze-style games. Even if it's not a maze as such, it usually is in some sort of area or some sort of realm out of which you must navigate. And so you got to remember where. And I'm terrible with directions myself. I mean, I suck at directions. But I invariably end up playing these first-person shooters where they don't give you any help. And unless the, you know, and you just get yourself hopelessly lost, but it's like you got to find your way out. So that makes sense. I mean, that it could rewire your brain in some way.
It drives me crazy that I'll play those games and I'm still bad at directions in the game. And my husband, who is brilliant at finding his way around places, brilliant at directions. He's one of those guys that no matter where you are, if he's never been there before, how many he can just go, no, east is that way. I'm like, God, I hate you so much. But he'll just stand over my shoulder and watch me play casually for a few minutes and then go, well, where are you going? I'm like, I'm trying to get back to the base. No, you want to go down that hallway and go left. No, no. I'm like, ah, I'm actually playing the game and I can't find my way around. He's just standing there going, no, no, make a right and go down. You got to go over that fence.
No, Lara's that way with not even with like directional stuff, but just in grokking how you play a game, the nuances and rules. Like games become way too complex for me very easily. Like I played that, it was like the Lego Indiana Jones or something. I think it might have been Lego Star Wars. I played it for like 7 minutes, and the first time I had to solve a puzzle, I was like, I'm out. I just pulled the ripcord. I was like, I can't solve anything. But I came back like an hour later, and she'd like beaten the entire thing.
See, I love the Lego games, but the thing is, the puzzles are a little complicated. So I always play it with like my laptop with the cheats open like over here. So I'll play and play and play, and then if I get to a point where I just can't find my way through somewhere, I'll just go and look up how to do it.
See, you can't do that though, because then you just become a slave to that. Like I forbade her to do that. There was a level of portal that she found really particularly challenging, and she's like, well, isn't there like a walkthrough or something? And I'm like, baby, you can't do that, because then it's like then you know it's there, then it's like a crack button in the lab and you're always pressing it. You don't want to do that.
The thing I like about Left 4 Dead is that there's really only one way to go.
Oh yeah.
So you're just running and running and killing and running and killing and running and killing. There's no way to get lost.
No, it's like playing Super Mario Brothers, basically.
Yeah.
Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Police have identified the bot. Oh, we're done with science.
Are we, science is,
We're done with the science.
There we go. There's your science news. You. By the way, coming up at 1 o'clock over at rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson radio program is yours to enjoy if you are a subscriber for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, even less. If you are subscribing for an entire year, which really that's your best Emerson value right there. Coming up today, we have a top five. What is our top five today, Don Taylor?
It's the top five worst songs recorded by actors.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't even know how you begin to narrow such a list down. All right.
It's not easy.
Jesus. Okay. Top five songs recorded. Top five worst songs. So these are the worst. In other words, not the top five songs, but the five worst.
Yeah, the five worst. Like,
on the list of bad, these are the top five.
Yeah, non-Shatner. I set myself the goal that I could not put Shatner on there.
So the top five worst songs recorded by actors, also another installment of Pop Culture Authority. This is actually a listener submitted us a question. He said, and actually was like, Dear Pop Culture Authority. So we've now fooled people into thinking that we're actually the definitive word on something. So a listener asks, what do all those other letters mean in the title of in the name of the club, CBGB's? It was on Bleecker Street in New York. So he asks, what do the other letters in the club, CBGB's, stand for? So we will get to that later on today. Pop Culture Authority, also the top five, plus Lisa Wood and Brian Wood of Big Ass Sandwiches will be joining us in the studio today. I'm unclear about whether they're bringing food.
I hope they are.
They didn't bring any food to the Outlook Portland taping this morning, and I did my very best not to look askance at them for that egregious oversight, but, you know, what are you going to do? By the way, speaking of food, I'm going to tell you that bread skull thing that I brought here yesterday, that Jack Moralia from Grand Central, the thing is almost completely gone. And by gone, I mean in my stomach. Wow. I mean, it was like 100 pounds of bread compressed into a tiny... You don't even want to know. It's a whole thing. Anyway, so the Rick Emerson radio program coming up today at 1 o'clock. Also, Geek Watch, And a penis watch. That is all on the way. If you are not a subscriber to the Rick Emerson Show, you can do so easy as pie, as they used to say, over at rickemerson.com. And if you are a subscriber who you maybe know someone who is not listening but ought to be, or perhaps if you have not subscribed because you are of limited or modest financial means at the moment, then we are here to help you with that, too. The Emerson Grant, brought to you in partnership with our good friends at New Millennium Maintenance. And they do landscaping, yard work, and what they puzzlingly referred to as nuisance abatement. And we never really are sure what that means. I always just thought it was code for, like, if you need a guy handled, like they know a guy who can, you know, like if it's crucial that he not testify, like that can be made to happen. That may not be it.
See, and I thought they had, that means they have some magical way of keeping neighborhood children quiet.
I don't know. I think that's just NyQuil. I mean, that's the way it was done in my neighborhood, but who knows? Maybe times have changed. Anywho,
am I allowed to dose other people's children with NyQuil? I didn't think that was allowed. Because yelling man across the way from me and his loud children are just very annoying.
New Millennium Maintenance and Landscaping. You can find out more about them at rickemerson.com. They are offering 10 one-month subscriptions every month to folks who are not currently listeners. So if you are not a listener to the Rick Emerson Show, if you know somebody who ought to be but isn't, all you got to do is you call this number. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You leave us a voicemail no more than 2 minutes in length explaining why you or somebody you know ought to be a listener to the Rick Emerson Show. And 10 of those folks every month and will be granted a one-month membership courtesy of New Millennium Maintenance as part of the Emerson Grant. This is Don Taylor.
A family in California has kicked out an unexpected house guest, a snake that bit a sleeping boy and was apparently living inside the walls of their house. The snake was reported just after midnight in Bell Gardens, California. A few nights ago, a 15-year-old boy who lives in the home said he awoke to the feeling of something biting him on the arm. But they didn't find anything. It happened again Monday night. This time, they discovered a 2 to 3 foot snake slithering around inside a wall heater. Animal control officers removed the reptile from the wall. The boy suffered superficial bite wounds.
No, did they say what kind of snake it was? Did I miss that?
It was a boa constrictor.
I didn't think they actually bit.
Apparently they do.
But it must not be very hard. In other words, because you always hear the rapping and the squeezing or whatever.
Well, maybe it was like trying to crawl into bed with him or something and he rolled over on it and it bit in self-defense.
So, I mean, but maybe, in other words, maybe they can bite, but that, maybe they're...
Yeah, because they're not poisonous, so it would purely be to...
Maybe they don't even really have fangs. In other words, they might have, you know, they obviously have a mouth, but maybe they maybe their teeth are really not all that harmful because their primary thing is the compression death or whatever. That's just creepy. And it was only 3 feet long, so I mean, where would that even have come from? They don't live in that area naturally. That seems like it must be one of those things that somebody just, you know, won at the fair and then decided that it wasn't working out very well.
Discarded.
Just throw in the sewer. What's the worst that could happen? Uh-huh. Jesus. That you know, and I wonder, the only way that story could be creepier... is if it took place a little bit closer to Halloween, and if there was some line in there about the boy had repeatedly told his parents there was a snake, but they told him to quit making things up.
Like Chris and the angry monkey in his closet.
Yeah, exactly. And just sort of just dreaming it. And then they convinced him that he was dreaming it.
It's impossible for a snake to be biting you while you sleep.
I keep dreaming in parcel tongue, Mommy.
Police have identified the body found in Fano Creek last month as a 25-year-old homeless woman. Tigard Police Department spokesman Jim Wolf said Sarah Tigaboo Amberber was found August 23rd.
I'm sorry, who?
Sarah Tigaboo Amberber.
Okay. Amberber?
It's a hyphenated name. Tigaboo-Amberber.
Just so I can be clear on this, and so everyone can be clear, this is... Tigaboo with a T.
Tigabu dash Amberber.
Okay.
The woman had been in and out of touch with family member in Tigard, but was mostly homeless, Wolf said. The investigation into Tigaboo Amberber's death is ongoing. Anyone who had contact with Tigaboo Amberber in the days before her body was found is asked to call the Tigard police. We're laughing at the misfortune of others.
Yes. I was about to say something else, but no, that really is, that's the bottom line there. Here's Don Taylor.
The parents of missing Portland boy Kyron Horman will appeal to viewers of the Oprah Winfrey Show on Thursday, more than 13 weeks after his disappearance. Kane and Desiree Horman are set to appear in the Chicago set during the first week of Oprah's latest season to tell their story. Kyron Horman vanished from his school science fair in June. We'll get the latest from his parents.
Now,
the show previews.
I can tell from your tone you're doing the same thing that I'm doing, which is you're becoming reflexively cynical about this. But let's do just a quick overview here. So clearly, this whole story is no good for Kyron Horman himself.
No.
Whether he is alive or whether he's not, you know, this has obviously worked out poorly for him.
Right.
This is the biological parent, not the step. Who's appearing on Oprah Winfrey?
The parents.
The biological parents?
Well, the stepmom, what with the murder plot with the landscaper and the mysterious money that they don't know how she got to pay the lawyer at all, she's kind of out of the picture right now.
Because the dad is divorced from the first and he's separated from the latter.
Right.
So he's separated from both of them.
Right.
Okay.
Now he's married to his missing kid T-shirt that he wears everywhere he goes.
Yeah, see, but I can't fault the guy for that. I mean, like, and you can't fault the guy for that. I mean, you can't even believe you're saying that because it's a silly thing to say. It does seem though that it's become one of those things that is now a story like in and of itself. Because I'm not saying Oprah doesn't have a reach; she does. But it seems like Oprah's probably not going to. It seems like Oprah's probably not going to get that message anywhere that it would do any good that it hasn't already been gotten to. It's unlikely that the kid's in Guam.
No, the Oprah people are not doing this because it's going to help in any way.
Right.
The Oprah people are doing this because this is going to be good for ratings the first week of her new last season ever.
That's my thing. It's like, because they never...
And it's not good for the parents because it's not going to help find the kid or anything. So they're doing it for the money.
Well, I don't know that I would even necessarily say that. I mean, because that presumes that they don't do it to help their kid, which seems like a thing that is just patently unbelievable, because you would have to believe that they don't care for the kid.
I don't believe that. I believe they care for the kid, and I believe that they are genuinely heartbroken, but at the same time, you know, you don't say to you don't respond to an offer to appear on Oprah.
If your husband was missing, if Patrick was missing, and, you know, and you were offered a huge media platform that you thought might help.
After it's already been a national story?
No. I'm saying if you thought it might help. I'm not asking you, like, as you judging them. I'm saying if you thought it would help, though, you would do it. So the only reason to assume that they're doing it for the money is if you think they honestly don't believe that there's any chance, which they must, because parents always believe that. That's the thing. Because no parent ever wants to say... Well, there's no proof, but, like, I mean, you've seen that a million times where it's like you've vanished for whatever, and it's like they still won't acknowledge that the whoever it is dead.
This is one of the rare situations, Rick Emerson, where you are the kinder, less judgmental, less cynical person than I am.
No, I'm just judging you. That's the thing. I've just switched the judgment from other, you know, you're judging them, I'm judging you, and then until we need somebody to judge me, and then it'll be like it'll be a perpetual motion machine of judgment and shame! I'm not trying to be a hard ass about it. I'm just saying it's... I also don't want to be like saying, well, and they don't. They're doing it for the money or whatever, because that just presumes that, like, and it's all well and good for us to sit here and go, well, like, well, it's not going to help. But like, they're like in this weird snow globe where they're not thinking rationally, and so it makes sense to you because you're not judging it through some emotional prism of, hey, my kid was stolen.
There just seems to be this sort of like Munchausen by proxy of fame. You know, about missing and like, you know, murdered children that happens to the parents. It's like they start to become, it almost seems like they become addicted to the enormous amount of attention they get because their kid's been snatched.
See, I don't think it's that. I think it's the parents, but I agree with you in this sense. See, I think you're both right and wrong about that. I don't think it's that as such. I think it's that parents very, very often define themselves by their kids, like, period. And so if your kid is successful and a doctor and is, a prodigy at playing the piano, then that's how you define yourself. And you have a picture of your kid playing a piano that's on a shirt that you wear all the time. Or you say, the absolute definition of this is the guy who walks around, and I'm not trying to knock people who have kids, because I carry pictures of my dog on my, the first thing I did on my iPhone was stick a picture of my goddamn dog on there. But I say, turning into Casey Kasem, but, you know, people who walk around, have I showed you a picture of my baby? And it's like they do so,
or you know, women whose email addresses or chat room
Chad's
IDs
mom.
And stuff. Yeah, Trish's mommy.
So it's like your identity as a parent is so often your kid, and so if your kid is missing, then your identity is the missing kid. I went home and my mom was wearing a shirt with my name on it. So that's, you know, I'm just saying. And my mom is like way beyond, you know. It's not like she does that all the time.
What kind of a shirt? Like a Rick Emerson show?
She had like she went. Well, it's like my mom. Like she went on and she's like, and I said, Mom.
Was it like a special embroidered shirt? I'm Rick's mommy.
It was like a thing she bought from the website. And I was like, Mom, please tell me you didn't spend money to buy a shirt with my name on it. And please tell me you don't wear it everywhere. And she was saying that, you know, that she didn't know I had shirts for sale. And she was so impressed that her son had a shirt with his name on it that she wanted to wear it out to lunch with her, a gentleman friend.
Oh, that's nice.
And I said, but I'm not trying to knock my mom. I'm just saying.
When I went to culinary school, my mother, apparently, I found out later, my mother told everyone that I was going to culinary school. And the best I could figure out is that it was the first thing I had ever done in my entire life that she actually understood and approved of. So it was like, my daughter's finally doing something I can talk about that makes sense.
Yeah, so I mean, parents just sort of define themselves by that anyway, which is another reason I don't have kids, because it allows me to define myself based solely on my own needs and desires.
Oh, and those of your dog.
Yeah, well, that's true as well.
Let's do the entertainment news. God, okay. We're running late.
I'm sorry?
We're running very late.
That's such a relative concept, Don. I mean, it's all... Who are you to be a slave of the clock?
That's true.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday on the Legion of News news program.
Well, we've had our three actor deaths in a row. First, we had the death of Glenn Shaddix, best known as the snobby interior designer in Tim Burton's Beetlejuice. He played Otho. He died at age 58 after a fall in his Birmingham, Alabama home. He was having mobility problems when in a wheelchair, his sister said. It looks like he fell and hit his head in the kitchen, and that was the cause of death. Shaddix had worked with the Central Alabama Pride, and in 2008 rode in the Birmingham Pride Parade. He was particularly involved in fighting the ex-gay movement, as he had undergone electroconvulsive aversion therapy as a teenager at the insistence of his father. His personal blog remains online. Next, Kevin McCarthy, who starred as the frantic doctor trying to save his community in the classic Invasion of the Body Snatchers, died at age 96. McCarthy died Saturday, and they would not reveal the cause of death or any other details.
I think it was from being alive for 96 years.
I think that would be it, yeah. Body Snatchers was one of the most powerful films of the classic 50s. In fact, he would consistently win praise for his acting in that movie during his long and busy career. The film, however, was a flop on its initial release. His frantic shouting of, "You're next!" to those in approaching cars became so well known among science fiction fans that he was often asked to spoof the role, including in the 1970s remake of the film. And finally, today we get the news that actor Harold Gould, who played Valerie Harper's father on The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Rhoda, and played Betty White's boyfriend on The Golden Girls, he's died at age 86 after a battle with prostate cancer. He was a 5-time Emmy nominee. He played Martin Morgenstern, Rhoda's father, and he also was a fixture on the small screen, appearing in more than 300 TV shows over his 50-year career, including Saved Elsewhere, Hawaii Five-0, The Rockford Files, Lou Grant, Gunsmoke, Dallas, Felicity, Judging Amy, and Cold Case. His latest TV role was on the final season of Nip Tuck earlier this year. He is survived by his wife, his daughter, his sons, and 5 grandchildren.
Who even knew that Nip Tuck was still on the air, by the way?
Yeah, I know. I thought that was way over.
Forgot about that. It showed like years ago. You were listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, you can get it at iTunes later on in the day. Also, is a downloadable archive right here at PDX.FM or at LegionofNews.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today, featuring Lisa Wood and Brian Wood, owners of Big Ass Sandwiches. They'll be here because they're coming up on their... I guess maybe it's like 6 weeks away, something like that. Their 1-year anniversary of being in business. So we will talk to the guys from Big Ass Sandwiches.
Do we know how many sandwiches they've sold exactly? Have they kept track?
I don't know that. They were. I should actually, well.
Because they sell a ridiculous number of sandwiches.
A lot.
Just insane.
We'll talk about this more next hour. They were on Outlook Portland this morning. We did a taping, so I'll talk about that. Don't forget, this fine program is brought to you by folks such as The Cleaning Solution. That is Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner, proprietor, operator, and grand maven and irremovable overlord of The Cleaning Solution. They will provide cleaning services for, as they say, anything your feet trod upon. They don't actually say trod, but you get my gist there. Whether it's carpet, stone, tile, upholstery, whether it's a hardwood floor, somebody asked me if they do hardwood floor, they do indeed. Or, in fact, if it's furniture, where it's just wear and tear, or whether it's something that your pet has eaten, or eaten and then uneaten. you know, whether it's you, your child, or some conglomeration of the above, your carpet just gets grungy after a while, and so you want to get that cleaned. If it's your office, they can do that as well. Home and residential cleaning of anything that your feet touch and inevitably stain and destroy.
And not just your dog, by the way, your cat as well. And believe me, I could tell you a story about something I had to clean up this morning, which I won't because it was horrifying.
Who even knew you owned a cat? Have you told me that before?
I have a dog and a cat. We don't talk about the cat much. The cat's not that interesting.
No.
She doesn't do much. She just sits in the bedroom, and when I walk in the bedroom, she goes, meow, and then occasionally she barfs something up on the floor.
Sits in the bedroom and hates.
Yeah.
So 971-533-3211 is the number for the cleaning solution, 971-533-3211. This is Don Taylor.
Wall Street Money Never Sleeps features the return of Gordon Gekko, played by Michael Douglas, and Bud Fox, Charlie Sheen, but Bud is just a supporting player this time around.
Damn.
As he gives way to new young Buck Jake Moore, played by Shia LaBeouf.
Kill me.
Shia LaBeouf, which means bashful meat in French.
Does it really?
No.
Okay.
Sheen has his own vision on how a Wall Street sequel would have shaken out. Sheen gives his 2 cents on Bud Fox. Because we all care what Charlie Sheen has to say.
Okay, hold on a second.
Thank you.
All right. He can't even be heard.
Oh, no, he's very quiet.
Jesus Christ. Oh, let me just turn everything else off here.
I'd written a backstory when we did the first one, but I never thought to write a future story a couple decades later. No, but I think it's interesting because the couple
the
things
penguin.
He does talk about, people that might be familiar with the first one, they're going to know. They're going to put those things together and say, okay, that makes sense.
Quit talking. All right, there you go.
Well, that was not interesting at
all. I just
all.
Turned it off. It had like another 30 seconds.
Yeah,
I don't
screw
care.
Him. Jury selection has been completed in a lawsuit against musician Kid Rock stemming from a fight at a Waffle House restaurant near Atlanta. Robert James Ritchie, better known as Kid Rock, and 5 members of his entourage appeared Tuesday before a DeKalb County judge. In the lawsuit, Harlan Akins claims the musician cursed at him during an early morning fight in October 2007 in a Waffle House, and members of his entourage beat Akins up and smashed his cell phone. Kid Rock pleaded guilty in March 2008 to a misdemeanor charge of simple battery. The musician stopped at the restaurant following a performance in Atlanta. The fight reportedly broke out after Akins recognized a woman in Kid Rock's party and spoke to her.
I'd like to have an entourage of guys that just completely pummel anyone who displeases me. I mean, I know that people, you know, that it's tempting to just call him a jackass and talk mm-hmm. about, you know, well, it's a big man that lets other people do his fighting. Damn straight.
Well,
I am
yeah.
delicate and I'm delicate and frail. Are you kidding me? If I could just get a bunch of guys who just walked around with me and I just, you know, that guy looked at me too long. Go give him what for. And
that's another reason we need an intern.
Seriously.
You can have him, like, deal with guys.
Yeah. We just say, like, hey, that guy's giving me the hairy eyeball. Go pull out his teeth, you know? And then they go, and that would just be unbelievably satisfying.
Let's see, one last entertainment story. Chelsea Handler twittered yesterday afternoon that she doesn't care that the New York Times called her hosting work on the MTV Video Music Awards, quote, the worst in show's history, unquote. Handler said the following, I know I had a good night. I had a blast and the show awesome last night. Bomb, your life is a bomb. She's a genius.
Uh-huh.
An estimated 11.4 million viewers watched the show, giving MTV its biggest VMA audience since 2002.
Also, she's like 80 years old, so how long is she really going to have to stick around to deal with those insults anyway?
Where exactly does one see these videos that supposedly MTV shows? Do they show videos on MTV again? I'm so out of touch with all of this because I'm not the target demographic or anything, but it seems like...
I think it's like most of their stuff has moved to like MTV2, and I guess, and I think they actually show most of their videos online. I think MTV actually now exists as a way to funnel people to their website.
Do the kids actually give a crap about videos anymore? Do they actually seek them out and watch them?
You know, I'm on YouTube right now as you actually say that.
Okay, well,
I don't know. Like,
I never...
Moving pictures are passe.
No, I'm just saying...
I mean,
saying,
as opposed to what?
Back when I was a youth, you know, we actually used to... you know, seek out videos and sit down and watch MTV and watch videos and talk about them. And I don't really actually hear much about music videos anymore in the cultural zeitgeist.
Well,
I just wondered if, you know...
I think that's probably because you're not really the target demo for those videos anyway. Like, you know,
but has this become kind of like the Clio Awards? It's like they're congratulating themselves for doing these good promotional things, but they're not really important culturally anymore?
Well... I mean, this is probably a larger discussion than we have time for here. I mean...
Yeah, since the show's pretty much over.
I mean, music videos are still... I mean, as long as there's going to be teenagers, there's going to be music of whatever, you know, targeted at young people. And as long as there's broadband, there's going to be pictures. So I would imagine that kids probably watch way more music videos now than they did. The kids today probably watch in a year more music videos than we did in a decade. They just don't watch them on MTV.
No, they probably download them, say, on iTunes.
Yeah, or it's like, because that's how Justin Bieber was discovered.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how, like, Soulja Boy was discovered. You know, whatever you think about that guy. Like, that was, like, his homemade stuff. But, like, it's a whole online thing now.
Damn, I feel old now.
Yeah.
This is all just an area I know nothing about, so I feel very old.
They view them on a kinetoscope, Don. It's a miraculous new technology.
They have those little pocket gizmos that they can watch the videos.
I'm going to go home and watch What the Butler Saw. It's a hot tale. All right, there you go. That's your 1% joke for today. Thank you. There's your entertainment news. Legion of News, brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show featuring Lisa Wood and Brian Wood of Big Ass Sandwiches, the top five worst songs recorded by an actor, and another installment of Pop Culture Authority. It all begins next at rickemerson.com after a very brief interlude. This, however, has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.